CJAM 99.1 FM programming is hosted almost exclusively by community volunteers. The views and opinions expressed on the following program are that of the host and their guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of CJAM FM. For more information and resources, visit our website at cjam.ca.
Hi, I'm Samantha, a past guest on CJAM's HandyLink. You're listening to HandyLink on CJAM 99.1 FM, reaching high ground in Windsor, Detroit.
HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells. In this segment of our show, Susan Sellers will be telling us about United Ability. So what can you tell me about United Ability?
So 76 years ago, a group of parents that had adult children with cerebral palsy at that time came together in a living room here with their faith leader and said, you know, our adult children have nowhere to go except an institution or home. And as a community, we need to do better than that. And so they started an organization that eventually became United Cerebral Palsy of Greater Birmingham and has been for 76 years. There are a lot of things that set us apart from other providers in Alabama. And that is that we serve the entire lifespan of individuals with disabilities and just our size. We serve over 5,500 unique individuals a year through our different programs. So that is from point of diagnosis, which can even be in utero, that we begin that journey with a caregiver all the way through the balance of an individual's life. We have adults in our adult day programs, our adult healthcare clinic, you know, that have been with us 40, 50, and 60 years.
So how do you reach out to the disability community to let them know that, that you are available as a resource and a support?
We do that through, you know, a variety of ways. And we do that through social media, of course. We do that through print media. We have wonderful relationships here, both with TV, radio, and print. Our director of marketing does a fantastic job of getting us on TV, getting us on radio. We are embarking on a new brand awareness initiative as we speak, with an outside marketing firm that will also include more traditional marketing like TV spots and billboards, etc. But in all honesty, the way that most people hear about us is word of mouth. And so that can be from their healthcare provider. That can be from a VR counselor for employment services. That can be from the State Department of Rehab Services for Early Intervention Services. It really, you know, depending on the program, kind of varies. But a lot of it is word of mouth.
So in your work, do you ever encounter any myths or misperceptions about persons with disabilities?
Oh, sure. Absolutely. You know, it's really frustrating when you see that people try to put individuals with disabilities in a box. They try to focus on what they can't do instead of what they can do. Our philosophy here is to integrate them as fully into their community as they want to be. And so we focus a lot on independent living skills, on employment services, in terms of health care, which I know we're going to talk about today, but just making sure that individuals know that individuals with disabilities deserve access to quality health care like anybody else. And so, yes, I think there are a lot of myths about individuals with disabilities, and particularly in the employment services category. You know, I find that people think, well, they couldn't do this job, or I wouldn't be able to afford the accommodations if I had individuals with disabilities work here. That's all myth, right? They can and deserve to have a vocation and a career that they love just as much as you love yours and I love mine.
So when you mention some of the healthcare issues, do you ever find one of the issues is that if a doctor isn't familiar with a condition, they might just want to do the quick diagnosis, in and out sort of thing, rather than actually standing beside that person through their diagnosis journey?
Yeah, I think we particularly hear this from adults that we serve, that there really are not very many primary care physicians that understand or know much about providing primary care to an individual with a disability. And so not only have we embarked on a unique partnership here with a federally qualified health center to do that in our health clinics, more importantly, or just as importantly, not more importantly, we have had a tremendous number of students that we invite to our campus to spend time with our participants, our patients. So last year we had 690 medical school, nursing school, therapy students on our campus from 10 universities and 17 disciplines for over 33,000 hours of supervision. So the University of Alabama, Birmingham is a well-known medical school, and it's here in Birmingham. And now every single second-year medical school student is required to spend 2 full days on our campus here at United Ability with our adults with intellectual developmental disabilities. We do that because we want them. They ask our participants, what would you like in a physician? How would you like your doctor to care for you and treat you when you come to their office? And they need experience in working with individuals that use augmentative communication devices. So much of our speech and language pathology work that we do is centered around AAC device therapy. And so we do this with all these students, nursing students, nurse practitioner students. We have 2 family practice residency programs now where the residents are rotating through our healthcare clinics, because we want every single one of them to go out into their practice and be a good provider and a willing provider to individuals with disabilities. It goes beyond primary care. We have the optometry students that rotate through our pediatric and adult programs and clinics, where they provide eye exam and eye vision services to individuals with disabilities. We also, through a partnership, take our adults to a dental clinic so that the UAB Dental School students can understand and see what it's like, how terrifying sometimes it can be for an individual with a disability to see a dentist. So all of those things are critically important to us, critically important to those we serve, and just critically important to the future healthcare of individuals with disabilities.
I'd like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Sure.
Thanks. This next interview is a post-dated one, so some of the events referred to may already have happened. In this segment of our show, Risa Paskoff will be telling us about Aaron's Acres. So what can you tell me about Aaron's Acres?
So Aaron's Acres is a nonprofit organization based in central Pennsylvania, and we provide year-round recreational programs to children and adolescents ages 5 to 21 with disabilities. We've been in existence for 26 years, and we started because a group of parents were looking for programs for their children. At that time, the kids were between the ages of 5 and 9, and they couldn't find a camp program that would meet their children's needs. So they created a camp for 1 week, a half-a-day program. We have 11 kids, and then it just continued to grow from there.
So these days, how do you reach out to folks with disabilities to let them know that this might be something for them?
We do it through our social media. We do it through, you know, being on TV, articles in the newspaper. We do presentations. We also have been blessed with word of mouth. So the positive is that a lot of our families are very pleased with our program, so that the word does travel. So right now we pull from about 5 to 6 counties within Pennsylvania.
So what sorts of disabilities do you most commonly see in your work?
I would say the majority of our children have autism or Down syndrome, but we have children with spina bifida. We have children with brittle bone disease. We have children with cerebral palsy. I would say those are probably the majority of the kids that come to our program.
So what sort of accommodations or extra steps do you take to make sure these kids will have both a fun and a safe camp experience?
Right. So I can't imagine a parent feeling comfortable dropping off their child in a setting where during the summer it's out in the open. There's no walls, there's no buildings. So we ensure safety for all our children with the following things. One, we have a 1-to-1 or 1-to-2 staff-to-child ratio, which means that every child's needs can be met immediately and appropriately. We also have a nurse on staff at all times, which allows a parent to drop their child off without having to stay. We have a lot of children with seizure disorders. Parents will say, I can breathe and I don't have to stay. We also have our supervisory staff are all professionals, mostly special education teachers, so that's the site supervisors as well as our group leaders. So they have the experience, they have the background. Our counselors, which are the one-on-one or 1-to-2, are usually undergrad students going into special ed, social work, physical therapy, occupational therapy, music therapy, recreation therapy. Getting the hands-on experience with the supervision. And then under them, we have 14 to 17-year-olds who are buddies, and they are high school students who are not responsible for behavior issues, and they're not responsible for toileting issues. They're really there to be positive role models. So every child has a counselor who's 18 or older that's with them at all times.
So what are some of the key benefits for these children being in a camp setting and being around those of similar conditions?
So the kids have the opportunity to be with their peers, not in a school setting, and engage in recreational activities. So they're working, our focus is on socialization and communication. So in every activity, we're helping each child to do the best that they can do with their communication skills and with their socialization skills. So in the pool, they go swimming every day. Those kids are learning how to take turns, how to share, how to follow directions. They're going horseback riding, therapeutic horseback riding. They're engaging in music therapy. They're doing fitness and exercise. So they're working on just being more active possibly than they would be if they weren't in a camp setting. We also have other programs throughout the year. So at all times, we are promoting socialization and communication, interaction. They're getting to see a magician. They get to interact with reptiles. They get to interact with animals from a petting zoo. So they're doing and engaging in activities that a child who doesn't have a disability does, and we take it for granted. They're being exposed to everything that a child should be exposed to, but They're getting the support and assistance so they can be successful.
So, in your time with Aaron's Acres, has there been any success moment or story that stands out for you?
Yeah, so I've been with the organization since the beginning. So, yeah, we have a few success stories. So, this summer, we had two young children. I believe they were 8 and 10, had never been on a horse. And we go to the therapeutic riding stables, and you could see the children wanted to get on the horse, but were terrified. So I am not exaggerating. One child took about 15 minutes, and one child took about 20 minutes to walk over to the horse, touch the horse, and then step back, and then walk over to the horse and step back. It was like a little dance. Our staff was patient, supportive, encouraging, but not to the point where it got the child too upset. And the staff at the stables were the same, very understanding and very patient. So after 15 minutes for the one child and after 20 minutes for the other child, each child got on the horse, went around the stable, the arena, and then when it was their time to get off the horse, both kids said, "Can we go again? Can I go again?" To see their smiles, to see their excitement, and we take pictures as the child's doing all the different activities. We have volunteers from the community that take the pictures, and then we create memory books for the kids. So the child, with a huge smile, "Make sure you get my picture so I can show it to my mom." That kind of success, that kind of pride, the sense of accomplishment, it was powerful. There were a few, teary eyes from the staff, and from our staff and from the stables, just watching the child as he navigated his fear, but got through it and was able to accomplish, getting on the horse and feeling good about it.
Like, thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Okay.
Thanks. HandyLink will be right back after these commercial messages, so stay tuned.
Canadian Blood Services invites you to save a life today. Every 60 seconds, someone in Canada needs blood. Donating is simple, and your blood will go to help Canadians undergoing heart surgery, leukemia treatment, or those involved in an accident. Go online and book your appointment today at www.blood.ca or give us a call toll-free at 1-888-2-DONATE. That's 1-888-236-6283.
Welcome back to HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells. Earlier in our show, we heard a little bit about Aaron's Acres from Risa Paskoff, and Susan Sellers told us a bit about United Ability. In this segment of our show, Stephanie Nitz will be sharing a little bit of her diagnosis journey. So you mentioned that at a young age you had a diagnosis and corrective surgery for it. Take me through a little of that.
I'm trying to remember the details. I think in grade school, fifth grade, they did like a random check at school for scoliosis. And like the nurse just has you kind of bend over and checks your back, whether it's whatever. Let my parents know that it looked like my spine was a little crooked. And then, like, about a year or so later, checked again, I was getting more. So we started going to a doctor. And then about middle school, I want to say 7th grade, or 8th grade, I'm sorry, I got a back brace. So just a plastic, they did a mold, and then a plastic brace that just Velcroed on. I'd had that for about a year, I think, and then it didn't really do much, apparently, or didn't really fix anything, so decided on getting surgery. So essentially the surgery, what it basically did was screwed on titanium rods on either side of my spine, and that was the gist of it. I can give more detail, of course. So,
as a young person, I'd imagine there was a certain fear and questioning of what will this mean for me.
Yeah, so you mean like how did I feel about the whole thing at the time?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, so it was, I guess, it was very scary. The whole, the surgery part was scary. The brace was awkward and uncomfortable at a time in your life where you're already a little awkward and uncomfortable. So that was a little something, but I kind of embraced it and it was not that big of a deal. The surgery part was a little scary. There was, of course, with any spinal surgery, there's risk of permanent damage, breaking the nerve, or with the nerves, or paralysis even. So that part was a little scary. The night before the surgery, I was a little more religious back then too, so I was praying and everything, and my mom was there for me. But I think, you know, we were hopeful, and then everything luckily went fine. They said they would wake me up in the middle of surgery just to make sure that everything was working right, you know, which I was really scared of that, but I didn't even remember it, of course. And then waking up was a lot very painful. Of course, the whole thing was very painful at first. And so, my family was around me. I think I was in the hospital for a week, not quite, and then was home, and we did it the summer between 9th grade and 10th grade, so I was off for the summer so I could rest and everything. The whole summer was pretty lame, so I didn't, in bed most of the time, and started walking again.
So tell me a little bit about how you kept yourself strong during the recovery. I mean, after those.
They didn't give me much for exercises. They just said to walk. So, and then some more leg exercise. They really focused on strengthening my legs, I guess, which I was kind of surprised about. But yeah, they did do some exercise to do and then started walking. I remember it was really weird, like, walking again. It was like learning to walk again physically. It was really strange because I was like kind of wobbly and awkward and stuff, like Bambi. but then it got better after practice.
So, as you've progressed in life, have you taken any steps to make sure that you're maintaining your health and, you reduce your risks?
Not as much as I probably should. I mean, I've luckily never had been super overweight. I think that would have been one of the risks too. One of the risks they did say when I was going to get the surgery, I'm back. You can cut and paste where this makes sense. I'm sorry, I'm jumping over. So one of the things, my spine was shaped like an S, so there was a curve at the top and a curve at the bottom. They had talked briefly about possibly correcting both curves, but decided not to do the lower one, because if I ever wanted to have a baby, carry and deliver, having the rods on the lower half could have been problematic, so they decided not to. And I do have a daughter, and everything went pretty well, luckily, that way. But I just remembered that piece. So I was lucky there as well. So what have I done since then? Probably should be doing more exercise. I've been really blessed, too, that I haven't had much back pain at all my whole life, which is even rare for people without having back surgery sometimes.
So, do you have any advice for anyone else who might be going through this journey at a young age, asking, will I be okay? Is there hope here?
Oh, yeah. I guess it felt super scary when I was young at first, and there is always risk, but I'm really, really grateful that I did it. I've seen some older people, and granted, they're much older, who've had scoliosis, and they're, I'm really glad I did it. It gave me a much, I think, easier life in a lot of ways. And I think for most people, it's worth the risk. And I'm sure nowadays, I mean, this was, gosh, like 30 years ago. I'm sure the surgeries and the recoveries are much easier now, too. But yeah, absolutely.
I'd thank you for taking the time out to do this. But if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Yeah.
Stephanie's story represents a key concept in disability life, preventative medicine. Well, it's possible to be diagnosed and treated at a young age and grow up without any problems. One should always take whatever steps they can to make sure things continue to run as smoothly as possible. Now, scoliosis, being a movement disorder, can create long-term problems, but there are those who have found ways to adapt and to live with it as well as possible. It's all a matter of taking the time, taking the care, recognizing your own rhythms. If something's not right, look into it. Take a minute to ask questions. As the patient, it's always your right to say, I need some help with this, or I'd like this to be clarified a little bit more. People in the medical profession should be willing to take the time and the care to listen to your concerns. While it is true that not every condition presents obviously, if it's having an effect, it's having an effect. Take the steps, take the time, look into it. Now, Steph, she's been very lucky, I think, in so much as it hasn't created any long-term problems. But being a child diagnosed with anything that could potentially cause complications can be a scary thing. From my own experience, I know that growing up with a disability is not necessarily a deterrent to a rich and full life. One can still achieve and create and enjoy all the things that life has to offer, but that doesn't mean it's going to be an easy road. That doesn't mean you don't have to take time and care of yourself. And honestly, it's hard for someone, especially a young kid, finding out they have a disability. If you grow up in the quote-unquote able-bodied world, and that's what you know, suddenly someone comes along and says, you're going to have to adapt a few things. That's not an easy concept for anyone to swallow, honestly. That being said, it's also a matter of making the best of what you do have. For I maintain, every person with a disability, no matter how minor, no matter how severe, has the potential to move mountains, to create something new for the world around them. Even if it's just living by example. Say you're someone having a rotten day, and you see someone who's totally nonverbal smile at you in just the right way. Maybe you come to realize that the world is a little better because someone sees it with a little optimism. Disability life is not hopelessness. It is a matter of creative thinking. I've always maintained this, that a person learns to work with their skills and their abilities, and yes, even to recognize their own rhythms and patterns, can thrive in this world. But, yeah, it's a matter of knowing yourself and knowing the circumstances around you. Medical science may be a great baseline, but it doesn't factor in the individual strength or support networks of any given person. There's more to life than what we yet see. There's potential in every one of us. And if you grow up with a disability, eventually, if you're very lucky and you have the right support systems and the right heart, the right mind, you can learn to draw a great strength from the gifts you do have. It's not up to anyone to tell you you won't achieve this or that. It's up to you to explore your own potential. This has been HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells, reminding you we're all equal. So get on out there and have yourselves a good one. Something tells me you've earned it, folks. We'll see you next week.